Good morning, Mr. Lindsay Gordon.
Good morning.
The last time that we met, we were speaking about your time in Malaya.
All right.
And I know that you've got notes with the museum, and I read those, and I've got some questions, so I hope it's okay to ask you about them.
Of course.
Okay. My first question is, you spoke about the companies going in by helicopter, and you mentioned the S-55 and the S-51.
And the S-51.
Mm-hmm. And you also mentioned that the men were going in by foot as well. And I wondered if the areas where you're being sent to for these gardening operations, I wondered if they were far from your base camp.
Some of them were in quite deep jungle. Some of them would be 2 or 3 or 4 days march in, perhaps. And certainly there would be no point in using a helicopter unless there's some distance to go, and of course very expensive too.
And when you speak about the expense of a helicopter as well, because of that, were you allowed to use them quite a lot?
I think we hardly ever used them. I can't remember the procedure. Certainly, I remember we called for a helicopter once to try and get a body out of the jungle, a deep jungle, and we never succeeded in it. So it probably wasn't all that difficult, but it wasn't a thing we used very often. I don't think we, particularly in the second period, we were in remote enough areas to need that sort of thing.
And you mentioned as well, before we came on air, that it was the other services who were supplying the helicopters.
So it was, yes, the Navy, as far as I remember, flew the S-55s, and the Air Force the F-51s. The Navy were the bigger ones, but I mean both were useful on many occasions.
So does that mean that really, you were in close cooperation and communication with both of these services?
Not as at platoon level, but I thought that it's necessary, or if having got up on the radio where the battalion thought it was worth to us, and then they would organise that, but we certainly didn't at that level.
Okay, and you also mentioned, still, speaking about the jungle, about one particular company asking for a fix, and I wondered what a fix was. It did say that because the going was bad, so I wondered what a fix was.
Well, they're just trying to get an idea of where one was. Because sometimes the maps were very inadequate, and also it's quite possible to get lost. And it would mean probably getting an Ulster light aeroplane to come over and you'd light a fire and make a smoke signal or something, and he'd then, with his better navigational aids, give you a map reference, and then you could start again.
And, when you were taken in either helicopters or planes were flying overhead or something, or even, when you were trying to send a smoke signal, did you not worry that was actually, telling the terrorists where you were?
If indeed they were near enough to see them, just a column of smoke going up wouldn't be seen all that far away, I don't think. You'd see it clearly from the air, but not through the thick trees, I don't think.
And did they have anything like that as well? Did they have, any air?
No, absolutely not, no. No vehicles, nothing. I mean, they were just on foot, and that was it.
And you also mentioned that sometimes there was leaflets dropped from the aircraft, and I wondered what these leaflets said. If you had an idea of what they said.
No, I think they would be. I mean, as things became easier, and to some extent they started to surrendering rather more willingly. I think they sometimes sprayed the jungle with leaflets inviting them to surrender and telling them all the comforts that they might or might not get in so doing. I think that is probably all it was. And Templer actually broadcast in Chinese. He learnt the Chinese word. He went over in an aircraft and shouted down a few words in Chinese about surrendering, and he was General Templer. Whether that was successful or not, I don't know. But so.
I was about to ask you, do you think it was successful?
I wouldn't know. It might have been. Okay. They were certainly becoming more willing to surrender, much, much less hard line in those days.
And with you being an intelligence officer as well, Was there ever occasions where you maybe met a terrorist? You know, where they maybe took a terrorist into the, was it the police station?
Well, no. One certainly might well have taken a surrendered terrorist as a, I mean, in theory, he might lead one back to his camp or something or other. Probably, in fact, they would have pushed off long ago once he realised the chap had surrendered. They would have moved. But yes, one used to take people in, certainly. Mm-hmm.
And did you get information from them? Would they tell you?
It wasn't our job to. That was the police job.
So it was simply to try and get them.
Once they'd surrendered and professed themselves to be on our side, as it were, and said they'd lead us to their camp or whatever, then they just became part of us and led us in.
Okay. And you also spoke about efficient signals, and I wondered what exactly the signals were, and if you could maybe...
Well, the signals were the radio set that every platoon carried. There was a signaller, always a chap who really understood the things, and a set, so that one had some kind of communication back with base.
And did they generally work okay? You know, was that
on the whole? Yes, on the whole they did. Yeah, there were certainly times when they didn't work all that well, and it was known for them to be switched off when one didn't want to be pestered by a higher authority. But that on the whole they worked quite well. Yeah.
And did they often bother you, the higher authority?
No, not really.
Okay. And you also mentioned in the writing that the platoon, well, the terrorists, was six independent platoon. And you also mentioned, was it Dan Jai? Is that the armed working force?
Not the Minyuin?
No, D-A-N-G-I, Dangai.
That doesn't mean a thing to me. If I wrote it, then
sorry, this is my writing.
Yeah.
I think that was it, the armed working force. And I was wondering how you knew the difference.
Dangai, yes, it was a district, I think. I think it was I think it was simply rather like sort of cults or something, working force. No, just a district.
And were they terrorists as well?
Yes. I can't remember what the armed working forces were. Maybe they were based in the village originally, rather than living in the jungle. I think possibly what it was.
But like the six independent platoons.
Well, that was really because the days when they were when they first started, they were formed into companies and platoons and things, when they were very much stronger and better organised than when I was there. And it would be a relic of the old days of when they formed themselves up into these groups.
And was that when they were fighting against the Japanese, or?
I don't know. You have to read The Jungle is Neutral, that book by Spencer Chapman. No, I think probably once they'd decided to take over Malaya, I think probably organised themselves after the war. After the Japs.
Okay. And how did you actually know that, you know, that was six independent platoon that was...
Because that's what we were told by the police, kept records and mug shots and things of them all. And it was their information entirely.
Okay. And
the police and special branch, yeah.
Okay. And did you see those? Did you see the pictures and that quite frequently?
Yes, they were in police stations. I think we had copies in our operations room and things, just for fun. We didn't need them, because if somebody was killed, then they always wanted the body out to see if they could identify him and cross him off the list.
Yes, there was a question about the body as well, and was the body on the pole? And I was wondering, had this to go back to headquarters?
We just took it out for the police to see. And then they hoped to identify it and see who it was.
Okay.
It was a bit of a sweat, but anyway, there it was, and the thing began to smell after a bit too, as you can probably imagine.
And you also mentioned, you know, when you were in the jungle, you know, trying to get the terrorists, an ambush sign, and I was wondering what an ambush sign was.
Well, there were a number of signs that you had in order not to make noise, and if the leading scout was walking along and suddenly saw what he thought was terrorists approaching, then he wanted to have a sign that everybody would immediately adopt an ambush position and hope that they would walk through. And in this case, it was simply a hand in front of the face. But there were a number of other signs too. I can't remember what they were now. Sort of hurry or stop or, you know, all those sort of things.
And were you wearing jungle boots at this time?
Yes.
So were they generally quieter than like a normal army boot?
They were rubber, yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Not that the army boots would have made any noise in the jungle anyway. But we all had these jungle boots, yes.
And did I know that you've spoken about the tappers before, you know, if you were in an area that would make a noise to
rattle their pails, yes.
But the animals that were in the jungle, you know, as you were going through, did they tend to make a noise as you were going through or anything?
There were a variety of animals. There were elephants. Occasionally one came across elephant trails, so they were never leading in the right direction. You always hoped they would, because it saved you not cutting through, but they never did. There were tigers. I saw two tigers at once from I think absolutely unique, from a scout car. And there were all sorts of buffalo and little deer and all sorts of animals, which one didn't see very much of. Mm-hmm.
And when you saw the tigers, would have been any threat that they would have charged you?
No, I was in a scout car driving along a road, and they just happened to be one on each side of the road. It was a unique sight at dusk.
Mm-hmm. But as you were going through the jungle, you know, like, did the monkeys and that start making a noise?
Oh, yes, there were masses of them. Yes, they were all. They made quite a noise anyway, whether we were there or not. But certainly, you're quite right. Yes, they probably would give alarm calls.
But you don't think it was any more excessive than they might have done? Anyway?
Well, maybe it was, but I mean, you couldn't do a thing about that. There's no way. I mean, you could stop the monkeys seeing you.
Okay, and when you mentioned the ambush as well, you know that like the. The lead scout would make the sign and you would all know to go into your ambush positions. What exactly were your positions? You know, how did
Well, you just, if you were following a track or something, just sort of get into the side and... I have no recollection of it ever actually happening. We used to lay ambushes, but then, of course, that was premeditated and you'd settle down and sit there and be bitten by mosquitoes all day long. But I've no record of the sort of sudden ambush ever working, but perhaps it did.
And when you did lay one, you know, was it like in a round formation or something?
No, it was probably along a track, expecting people to come along. No, you couldn't just lie down in the middle of the jungle, too, and there's no reason why anybody should disappear. But if there was a track, then there was possible that's being used.
Okay, and there was another... Well, you mentioned the SEP, and I wondered what the SEP is.
Surrendered Enemy Personnel. A chap who had surrendered for whatever reason.
And I was asking you off air, you know, did you ever get information? But really, your job was just to take him back?
We went there to gather information. We were there simply to act on it. It was the police and special branches' job to do.
Okay. And the other question I wanted to ask you about was about some of the photographs mm-hmm. that you'd given the museum as well, and that was when you were in charge of the E-bands of the platoon, and if you could maybe tell us something about it.
Well, originally, I don't know when it started, but each battalion would always have a couple of E-band trackers attached to them, because they were supposedly very good at seeing traces of people's passage and deciding how many people they were and how long ago they'd passed by. And then they decided one day to form a regiment of them. I'm not quite sure why. And I was given the first, I think it was 36 or something, to train because I spoke something approaching their language. And there was actually, I can't remember his name, a colonel elected as CO, a chap of the Mons Star. It was some dugout from sort of last command. And that was it, really. They were great fun. I can't remember how long I had them, a couple of months, I suppose. They were very loyal and very and great fun. The only thing is you try to train them to use modern weapons. But if they did sight a terrorist, they just drop their weapons and pursue them with their parings. These knives they used to make. But anyway, there it was.
Did they ever catch any?
I not that I'm aware of. I don't know what happened to them after our training. I think they probably dispersed among other battalions. I've never had any follow up.
And so, how difficult was it to train them as well? Were they quite a primitive people, you know, or were they quite sophisticated, civilized?
No. The very last thing I would call them was civilized. I used to have to pay them, and they obviously had nothing so much. I had the greatest job to tell them that if you wrote in the paybook what they're actually getting, that they weren't actually getting any dirty little notes. And when it came to when there was 4-5 weeks in a month, or four, occasionally, they skipped a week, I can't remember, because it went enough I used to have to keep an enormous box full of dollars, Malayan dollars, to show them that the stuff was still there. Eventually they got used to it, but I mean they were totally sort of civilized and used to anything. But they were very loyal, they liked being drilled and they enjoyed everything. And as I said, it was fun, I enjoyed it. Mm-hmm.
And was this still part of the Gordons, or was it like part of the army? You know.
I think when they were being trained, I suppose they were part of the Gordons. They had a hut, and our CO used to inspect them and stuff. And they became, as it were, almost a platoon within the regiment. Yes.
And do the IBANs, do they come from Malaya? Were they just?
They came. No, they were from Borneo. They're from the Song and Kapit rivers in Borneo, when it was over, those officers and sergeants that had trained them were given the opportunity to go back and live in their longhouses. But I was then too busy, would have been a great experience. I would have liked to have done that.
And the people who you're saying could have got back to their longhouses, would that have been like Scottish people or?
Well, whoever had been, I don't know who else it would have affected. But neither, whichever sergeant it was, I can't remember, or were able to go. Yeah. It would have been quite an expedition. You flew to, and then you went by road, and then after a bit you got in a boat and paddled. I think it was quite a. They all lived in these longhouses in the jungle, on stilts, and. It would have been a great experience. Anyway, there it was.
And from the photograph, they all look very smart. You know, they've all done their uniforms and their
yes. Smart. Oh, yes, they were issued with General Green, like everybody else, and boots and things.
And how difficult was it to get them to wear things like that? Because I'd imagine in their normal environment, they would just have on quite limited clothing.
Yes, well, they were quite thin. I mean, they were a pair of trousers and a bush jacket. It wasn't a question of it being too hot. No, they didn't mind that at all. But they all—they were covered in tattoos. They used to tattoo themselves. You'd see it going on. They had a little bundle of needles stuck in the end of a stick, and they'd sort of go tap away with these things. And absolutely covered all over with the patterns and things. And also they drew out their earlobes, some of them too.
What did they do, sorry?
Well, drew out their earlobe, pierced them, and then drew them out.
And did they exist quite happily alongside, you know, the army? Did
yes,
they?
I think the army were amused by them, probably, but I think they couldn't obviously talk to them. But I mean, I think they were quite amused by them. And they always used to get on very well in platoons, on patrol.
And did you find it interesting work?
Did they?
Did you find it interesting?
Yes, I enjoyed it very much. They had such peculiar habits, like they used to, if they found a dead log with their parang, they'd cut the thing open and get out weevils about 6 inches long, gulp them down, which is all right. But I went out on one patrol with them and some Gurkhas, and the Gurkhas, I think, were very surprised at these primitive people.
And, you know, when you mention something like that about them, you know, getting these small animal life, if you like, and eating, but, like, nowadays in the army, or we see on the television that people, you know, could survive in the jungle by just doing things like that. Was there ever any time that you were taught how to survive in the jungle, you know, eating things?
I was never pushed without rations, no. But, I mean, certainly they would have survived, and I mean, they were thrilled. They found a python one day, and that got chopped up, and did them. It was a great banquet, eating the python.
Did you get a piece of it?
No, I had a weevil. I refused to eat it alive, but they, fried it wasn't bad. No, I didn't eat the python, I don't think.
And did they eat, like, the food that the other soldiers?
Yes. Good question. I think they probably got a lot of rice. I think they quite liked the so-called compé rations, tin ration. I think I really can't remember now. I think they probably did largely eat our rations, but as I say, with a whole lot of rice too.
Now I know that you can speak a number of languages. Could you speak their language as well?
Well, it's very similar, not entirely, but quite similar enough for them to understand, and vice versa. And then, as indeed is, I mean, Indonesian is not, it's very much the same stem too. Yeah. I mean, my wife's got an Indonesian niece, and I can speak Malay with her, and she understands it.
So you're still practicing?
Not really, just occasionally.
Okay, and so generally, you know, could you understand one another, or did you need anyone in between?
No. And one didn't have anybody in between. No. Okay. Because we never needed to say anything very complicated.
The other thing I wondered about as well was you had been sent back to Britain for the aerial photography course.
I was sent back actually for an anti-tank course. Mm-hmm. And then the air photograph course, I think, was tacked on probably to put in time. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And with you being the intelligence officer as well, once you went...
Well, I think that was part of the reason, the air photograph course, yes. Uh-huh. Yes.
And so did you actually, you know, when you speak in the writing about aerial photographs, were you actually studying those as well?
Yes, we certainly had a certain number of air photographs in Malaya. I can't remember how much cover, but there was a certain amount, yes. But it's really, I don't think really applied it. I mean, looking for sort of gun positions and things in the war, it was quite inappropriate to Malaya, just jungle and clearings. I mean, there were villages and things. I think it's probably a complete waste of time.
Okay. And when you were in Malaya, I know in the jungle, well, in the jungle as well, did you get any relaxation time? You know, was there anything, any time that maybe you could sit and read a book or something?
What, in the jungle?
Uh-huh.
Yes. I probably didn't buy one, didn't bother taking books because they were heavy to carry. No, I don't think one probably did. I think when the evening came on, when we had our evening meal and went to bed. I don't think one probably ever took books in, actually.
Mm-hmm. Oh. And when you were in the jungle as well, you know, at night time, I would imagine it would get quite dark. Did it get quite dark? Mm-hmm. And did you have any form of lighting as well, you know?
We had the odd torch, we just climbed into our sleeping kit and they call them bashes, little things we used to make out of ground sheets. I think it just went to and obviously we had sentries and things, but apart from that, I think we just waited for the dawn.
Mm-hmm. And did your clothes get quite wet in the jungle as well?
Oh yes, uh-huh. I mean, it rained most days at some point. And in the wet season, it rained a bit more, and in the dry season, a bit less.
And what did you do about your clothes in the jungle?
They just dried off. I mean, it was just one of those things.
Okay, and when you were back at base as well, was there ever occasions then that you could get any relaxation?
Oh yes. Someone wasn't on patrol all the time. Oh yes, I'd come out and have a day or go back to ordinary regimental duties. Things. Oh yes. It wasn't like the terrorists. I mean, they never got a day out of the jungle. Once they were in, they were there.
Okay. And was there any communications with home or anything, you know?
We did never cross one's mind to. I never rang people up in there. I don't know whether it would have been possible. We'd never crossed one's mind to do so, I didn't think.
Mm-hmm. But could you get letters
from Oh, yes. The BFP, British Forces Post Office. I can't remember what the number was. Oh, yes, very much, yeah.
And so when you came back, you know, from Malaya, was that the end of the Gordon's tour of... No,
when I eventually came back, yes, in the end of my second tour. Yes, we all came home together, yeah.
Okay. Was that in 54?
Yes, 54, yes.
Okay. And how did you feel to be coming back as well?
It was jolly nice, I think. I think we probably all had enough of it. Yeah, it was very nice to come back.
Mm-hmm. And how did they get you back? Was it by ship again?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. But you were with the battalion
yes.
this time?
Yes.
And do you remember who you were? Did you share a room with someone, or do you remember?
I remember the ship's called the Dunera, I think,
Were you sharing a room?
Yes. One, I think it was cabin for, I think it was probably four of us or something. So one always had a sharing with somebody.
Okay. And did you get some time off after that as well?
Yes, I think we got a massive leave, I think, once I think, I can't remember what we had, one day for every month there, was, I can't remember, but anyway, certainly it was a lot of leave, yes.
Mm-hmm. And then you went back to Edinburgh?
Then I went to Edinburgh.
Uh-huh. And do you remember which barracks in Edinburgh?
Yes, Redford Barracks.
Okay, now had you been at Redford before?
No.
Okay.
No.
Do you remember your first impressions of it?
Just a good old barracks in the south west of Edinburgh, I think it is. And back to sort of peacetime soldiering.
And how did you take to that after, you know, being in
Edinburgh? Not at all well. Having enjoyed myself very much and worked very hard in Far East, there was far too little to do, really, just regimental parades and those sort of things, and ministry too. No, I didn't care for Edinburgh much.
I should have asked you as well, we've got the picture here about when you went to the Sultan's house, was it?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Could you tell us a bit about that, please?
I think I imagine it was obviously his house, or did he come to us? I honestly can't remember where that was. It probably was his palace.
Mm-hmm. And was it an experience for you?
Yes. It was, waving the flag sort of thing. He was a nice enough little man, but I mean, my Malay didn't really run very far. It's a very extremely precise language. It's one of the easiest languages in the world to learn badly, but it's also an extremely precise language, and the number of different I's and U's, depending on the status of the person you're talking to or so on, are absolutely legion. And once I tried to learn what the terms one used to the Sultan, but after a bit, I mean, I'd been used to telling the soldiers how revolting they were, and which wasn't quite suitable for lunch talk, I don't think, with the Sultan's wife. But anyway, there it was.
And could they speak English?
I don't think they spoke any English, actually, from memory. I think otherwise life would have been easier. But I simply can't remember. If so, I think it's extremely rudimentary.
And, you know, in their culture as well, you know how, like, the Japanese bow to one another,
yes.
And depending on what level of society you're at. Was there anything like that in their culture?
I can't remember whether we bowed to him. I simply can't remember. We may well have done, or inclined one's head or something.
And were you the only officer who could speak the language?
Yes.
Okay. Sorry about that. We'll go back to...
It doesn't matter.
Back to Redfern Barracks. I just had remembered, we'd forgotten about it. So, once you did get back to Redfern Barracks, what, I mean, you've said that there was duties there. Can you remember some of the duties that you actually had to do? You know, was there any ceremonial drill or anything you did?
Yes, there is endless ceremonial drill.